Hey, this is Vivian Campbell, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
Hi, this is Joe Bonamassa, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
Hey, this is Phil Soussan here, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Welcome to episode 531 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 531, we have two fantastic artists joining us to talk about shows they're both doing separately at Jurgle's Rhythm Grill in Warrendale, PA. First up, we have Eric Gales, who is relatively fresh off a phenomenal record called Crown, that was produced and released in 2022. It was produced by Joe Bonamassa, but I think a really statement album from Eric Gales. Eric has been around since the early 90s. I think a lot of people remember some of those early Eric Gales Band albums and have been aware that he's prolific number of albums over the last 20, 30 years. But this one, I think, kind of jumped off the page. And we go into great detail about the album. So we'll get to Eric in just a moment. Then joining us a little bit later on, Phil Soussan, a bassist of Last in Line. You may remember him from his time with Vince Neil. Also, you can't not remember him from the Ozzy Osbourne Band of the 80s, one of the co-writers, primary co-writer of Shot in the Dark, one of Ozzy's biggest hits. So Phil, a master songwriter, and really had an enjoyable conversation with him about songwriting, so we're going to stay tuned for that. Without further ado, we're going to play you a little bit of Eric Gales. We'll get into that interview in just a moment.
Tired of being in the back seat, I want my crown. Tired of just making ends meet, y'all, I want my crown. Tired of hearing about Joe B.
Say what?
And how he tweaks that sound. Now it's my turn, my time to eat, I want my crown. Been on someone else's dome for far too long.
Now, for the people in the back, I don't know if y'all can hear me real good,
but it's time to step in the ring. Me and you, let's get it, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome the Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Eric Gales. How you doing, Eric?
I am doing wonderful, man. Just glad to be in the land of the living, man. I'm doing all right.
That's a great way to look at it, quite honestly. You're going to be coming into Pittsburgh to do a show. You were here last summer doing a show right in the city at the Highmark Blues and Heritage Festival. This time you're going to be doing a club show at Jurgles, which ought to be packed on the 11th. So, haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Crown album came out, and have to ask one thing that I was listening to the album this morning. A very, very much a statement record. You know, not that your work prior to that, you've got a ton of albums, but was there a particular mindset you went into with that album? Because it feels to me like the lyrics in that album really, really have a message behind them. Is that something you gave a lot of thought to?
Yeah, we meticulously, this was intended to be even more of a statement. You know, this was definitely meant to be a statement record. Kind of had the pre-conversation with Joe and Josh, and that was very intentional to do, and, talk about some things that was happening in the world that, the best way that I could musically and lyrically try to, give my insert to try to make it a better place.
It's interesting when I listen to the record, because I think there a lot of guitarists who kind of become singers in the blues. You think of them as a guitarist first. I mean, I think anybody who thinks of Stevie Ray Vaughan or B.B. King, you go to the guitar first, the vocal second. And when I listen to this record, obviously there's plenty of pyrotechnics on the guitar there, but I really think of some of the moments in the album where, there's a little bit of a rap break in the one song, and some of the voiceovers you do at the beginning of the songs really, to me, almost overshadow the guitar in a great way. And that's
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because in our conversations, me and Joe discussed, I think I have made the statement in the world to let them know that I maybe can play guitar just a little bit.
Tiny bit, yeah.
Just a little bit. And, we want the listener to say that, man, that's a dope guitar player, but his vocals is amazing, as opposed to his vocals is okay, but his guitar playing is,
absolutely.
So it kind of goes in tail with what you said. So that at least lets me know that our intent got across.
Got to this guy. Maybe I can't speak for everybody, but I think you'd be hard pressed to listen to that album and not, a lot of times, I'll be quite honest with you, you listen to fill in the name, you wait for the solo. It's like, okay, how's the riff?
Right.
How's the solo?
Right.
Yours, I honestly didn't care if you soloed at all in some of these songs. I was a survivor.
I love it. I really do love it. And again, when there's time on this record for me to press the gas, I believe that I do.
Absolutely.
And I don't deprive prior fans of knowing my guitar work. Mm-hmm. I don't think I deprived them of that. You know, I think like you said, I wanted to raise the elevation level of, you know, vocally, that that I have something to say and sing about as well.
I'm curious. One thing that kind of, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but when you threw a little shade at Joe Bonamassa in that first song, was that something you did kind of as a joke because you knew he was a producer, or was that in the song before you decided to work with him? Because that was, I thought, enjoyable.
It was a joke because he was a producer, and actually that was his idea.
Yeah.
To even put that in the song.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, you listen to that song, the title track, and it is really, I think, a very poignant lyric, because, you know, you think of, you know, you may have been working with the guy with the crown, you know, in some respects. You know, there's always kind of in the blues sort of the hot player. You know, for a minute it was Robert Cray, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, John Mayer. You know, the history is full of guitarists, but you know, it was kind of a neat thing to listen to that in the lyrics, knowing that Joe's behind the console on that one. I think that was really kind of a neat thing.
Thank you, man. It's just, you know, for, you know, many, many years, man, that, you know, a lot of guitar players' names are being mentioned. Yeah, I understand that I went down a road that had me, you know, diminish my career somewhat, but, you know, the comeback is very, very strong. And, you know, I've been around since 91. And, you know, that was, you know, Joe was like, man, you know, it's time for you to get your crown, man. And,
yeah,
and you know, you've been around, so, you know, and let's make a statement off of that. And, you know, and it's not me bragging or boasting. I mean, but this is like raw facts that are here, you know, regardless of, you know, the dark path that my life took, you know, mm-hmm. I still have been fortunate enough to be a player. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm still here playing, and let Joe tell it, you know, I'm playing better than ever.
Yeah.
And his goal was, man, I'm here to help you get your crown, and we're going to do it. And, you know, so that's what that was all about.
Let me ask you, the album cover. I look at that and I think whoever had the decision to make and take that image nailed it. You know, I think of, you know, there's some kind of covers in rock that really make a statement. And there's a host of them. But that is such a, I think, it draws you in as a listener. Like, this guy looks serious as hell on this album cover. Awesome artistically. You know, was that, you have like an art director that kind of works with that? Or was that something you guys just kind of spitball ideas?
I mean, that was actually kind of all spearheaded by me.
Yeah, but... I love it.
It was all spearheaded. I kind of had this vision and, you know, had people around me that helped make it come to light. But, you know, these were all visions that I had and that I saw, you know, from the front of the back and the inside of the album was, you know, these were things that I was seeing in visions in my sleep at night. Yeah. And, you know, and we were able to make it happen. So I'm glad you paid attention to that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I look at this and I think that it looks so contemporary, you know, and I think it's the kind of cover that draws in someone who may, you know, you think of blues albums with maybe an old rusted tin shack or, you know, something that looks like Muddy Waters' house. And no disrespect to those, but this album, you know, I looked at this and I was like, this kind of reminds me in some respects of like that image of Biggie with the crown. And I was like,
exactly,
you know, this guy's that
exactly.
You know, this belongs on T-shirts.
Exactly.
And
exactly. And they are on T-shirts, as a matter of fact. But I agree. I mean, yeah, I'm noted as a blues rock guitarist, man, but I have elements of, you know, today's modern era, mm-hmm. You know, like, and that was my whole thing. How can I show imagery of who I am? You know, I wear the gold chains and the gold teeth and all that sort of stuff. I mean, but you know, I'm yet embodied as a blues rock guitar player. I'm still that. But how can I give it this 2024 or 2022, you know, image? You know what I mean? And give it this, you know, modernized sort of vision. And I'm glad we're talking about that, because that was definitely the intent to make happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, blues is just always kind of been rooted in tradition, but I think you gave it, you know, I say at least a fresh coat of paint, but I think it the image is just so well done. You know, I look at that. The only criticism I have of the whole image is I'm looking at that chain on your right hand, thinking that thing would get in the way on the strings, but we won't scrutinize that too bad.
But actually, it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
You're a hell of a better guitar player than I am. it's a cool look. So as far as is touring now, I mean, it's been, you know, pushing 2 years since the release of The Crown. As far as your live show, can we still expect a decent dose of that record? I mean, you've got 19 studio albums. You can't begin to play everything.
Yeah, I'm actually still playing quite a bit of the Crown album, with little inserts of one or two of the other records. And this all depends on how I'm feeling, on what I may insert in there. But the bulk of the show is, you know, an updated live rendition of some of the Crown songs. And we're having fun with them, man. You know, slightly different arrangements. Mm-hmm. You know, live is live. And it definitely has massive intensity and energy, and I'm still pushing the Crown record right now. I'm pushing it until the wheels fall off.
That's a smart move. When you make an album like this, you know, that Grammy nominated kind of stuff, where do you go from here? I mean, this is not going to be an easy record, at least, you know, as I listen to it, to say, okay, this is going to be an easy one to follow up. So do you go more of the same kind of spirit in the lyrics, musically, or do you say, okay, I got to step back and maybe go, you know, make a left turn and go somewhere totally different next time?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a left turn, totally different. But in the next, just between me and you, the next record is going, I haven't really told nobody this, but it's going to be a tribute record. I can't say to who. I'm not at liberty to unveil that information right now, but it's going to be a tribute record to somebody that's very, very close to me. Awesome. And that's going to be the next record. And the record after that is going to be, kind of a left turn, follow up, maybe, just tossing this out there. This may be Crown 2 or, Crown 2, like Round 2, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm putting one in between, a tribute record in between the next follow-up Crown record.
Sure.
But this is going to be, a tribute blues record. That's the focus of the next record.
Now, Eric, will that be just you doing the tribute, or is this going to be a contribution to a larger group of artists in a tribute?
Well, the main bulk of it is going to be me. I intend to have a couple of guest artists on it that also knew this person very, very well.
Okay.
And it just makes sense to, incorporate contributions from, good friends of this person on this record. As much as I can. If it don't line up, then I got no problem doing it all myself. I do have some commitments from some pretty high profile people to be involved with it, because I mean once it comes out who the record's about, it's definitely it just lines up to, for people to be in line to be a part of this record.
Yeah, and I think you've got a lot of great connections and just looking back at some of the people that worked with you, Beth Hart and Joe, and I mean, I imagine you put the word out that you're looking for people to play on the tribute to anything, and people are going to show up, so that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, I want to thank you so much again. You are in Pittsburgh to do a show at Jurgles May 11th. We'll be looking forward to that, and people can get that Crown t-shirt, I hope, at the show. If not, it's available on your website, I see, so snatch those up.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Oh, yeah. I also have this new collector's Crown guitar that is only 100 of them made. And when they're gone, they're gone. I'll have them at the show. Everything. And this you can only get while I'm on tour for now. And this is not available on the website. So That is that, and other items and trinkets, and you know everything that's you know majority of everything that's available on the website. I will have on tour, and you know we're just pushing and moving, man, and having a good time, taking the music to the people, and gonna keep going.
Fantastic, Eric. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We wish you safe travel. Enjoy your night in St. Louis, and we'll talk to you in a little over a week, man.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.
All right, that's May 11th, Jurgle's Rhythm Grill in Warrendale. You can check out Eric Gales and a healthy dose of that fantastic album, Crown. I'm going to turn our attention now to another show that's going to be Jurgle's on the 5th. That's coming up extremely soon. It's Last in Line. Last in Line's last studio album is called Jericho. Phil Suzon joined the band after their first album, replacing the departed Jimmy Bain, who was obviously with Ronnie James Dio, Vivian Campbell, Vinny Appice on drums. Phil came in and you know did that work of Jimmy so well, and the band really was very cohesive, and they decided to keep it rolling. So they released Jericho. We spoke to Phil about a year or so ago, and this time really appreciated Phil's time because we really get into kind of songwriting is a craft. So if you're a person who, a musician who is interested in songwriting or a songwriter who's been doing it for a long time, this is an interview for you. So again, Phil Suzon from Last in Line.
For those who didn't catch you guys the last time, in 2023, you guys released Jericho, which, is obviously the band has now gone past, you know, just paying homage to Ronnie, but you know, into being kind of a real band. And can you kind of talk about how that's evolved, you know, from the time that, you know, obviously you weren't with them at the very beginning, but how the band has kind of evolved the mission statement, so to speak.
Yeah. I think initially the band, of course, is going to rely on the material that they created for the purposes of familiarity.
Sure.
It's the same when you start any new band. People sort of want to know, well, where did this band come from? And, you know, in this particular case, we focused on, or the band focused on the material that was actually written by Vivian and Vinny, and at the time, Jimmy Bain.
Mm-hmm.
So those first two Dio albums had some of the material that was being used. And as time has progressed, those songs have been, replaced. They were almost like placeholders,
mm-hmm.
new material. The idea was always that the band was an original band and was going to be an original band, very similar to how Dio started in the first place.
When
they started playing, you know, Black Sabbath, Dio era Black Sabbath songs predominantly, but then eventually they filled out to the original material, and then it became known as the Dio band, and that's how that evolved. Now, in my case, of course, after Jimmy had passed away, they had just completed their first solo record that was a Last in Line record of original material,
mm-hmm.
and Jimmy, passed away literally. I think it was right before or just as the album was coming out. So the initial intention was that I would go out and fulfill the gig obligations that had already been in existence.
Right.
And that was it. So, you know, I went out there with the sole, my goal was to try to pay tribute to Jimmy and to try to do what he was unable to do in terms of bringing the music to the band, to the people. So I tried to channel Jimmy as best as I could, which we were friends and we knew each other quite well. So that was actually fun for me to do. I tried to play as closely as how he played on the Dio material and also on the new material.
Sure.
You know, I tried to keep myself out of it. And that through doing that, I got a lot of, it was very gratifying and it was a very nice way for me to pay tribute to my friend. As that tour progressed, it became evident that there was definitely a chemistry in the band and a chemistry worth investigating. And so we got together and we wrote a second record and the rest is history. And we decided to stay together and continue writing solo material. So how has it changed? I don't know. I think it's just evolved. There's definitely a lot that I bring to the table that would be different from what Jimmy would do. We were different people. We had a lot of respect for each other, and we had our roots in the same classic rock music. But, you know, we all have slightly different ring binders of influence.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my stuff is predominantly a lot of post-punk stuff, which I really loved a lot. And so I would find these, you know, bring in these different kind of ideas, different grooves. But the method by which we write stays the same. The three of us get into a room, Vinny, Viv, and myself at the start, and we just start playing around with ideas. I mean, we don't bring anything that is pre-recorded or pre-demoed. We just sit down and say, hey, let's mess around. Let's see what starts to sound good. And the minute we get an idea that sounds good, we'll start to play around with it. I usually bring a multi-track recording system in to the rehearsal room, and we'll mic everything up so we can actually record these bits. And we start to try to turn them into completed ideas, completed songs. At that point, something that would be ready for Andrew to really start to experiment with. And that's pretty much how it works. Then we chop up and we cut these things up and we play around with them until we end up with the songs that we're happy with. And then we'll go in and record them properly.
With
Jericho, it's the same thing that we did with Jericho. Jericho was done, of course, through the pandemic. So
yeah.
Six tracks were done at the beginning. Six tracks were done during the pandemic, where we were not able to necessarily work as closely with each other as we would have liked to have done. And then we did the EP as well, which was done here in my studio. And everybody kind of phoned in their parts and put it together here. So it was possible to do something in separate rooms.
Yeah.
And that showed that was a possibility. And so when we did the final six songs on Jericho, there was a hybrid of that. Some of the stuff was done collectively, and some of the stuff was done remote in different rooms.
It was just people kind of dealing with what life had thrown at us at the time and making the best of it.
Yeah.
When you guys are writing, do you have, like, when you're putting riffs in, you know, and kind of developing these songs with just the instrumentalists, so to speak, do you guys have an idea in mind what Andrew would be doing melody wise, or do you kind of leave that to his discretion to kind of do what he sees fit based on the lyrics?
Yeah,
or do you have kind of a rough idea of where the song's going to go?
Think you know, I mean, I can't speak for everybody. I can speak for myself. I tend to have ideas of melodic ideas, and sometimes I'll bring them up, but not always. And there again, I don't really want to do that too much, because, you know, I would like to leave somebody to come up with what they would come up with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the spirit of this band, is that everybody, it really is an equal contribution all round. I mean, there's been times when I've come up with some lyrics, I've come up with some melody ideas, I've come up with a lot of harmonies, I come up with all sorts of stuff. But really, to start with, everyone really needs to come up with their own material and bring it together. And I think that's the chemistry that exists in this band.
Yeah.
Because it works. It works.
Yeah.
It's very seldom that we do something and somebody says, oh, no, that doesn't work, we need to change this, it's not complementing what's going on. It's usually the opposite. It's like, wow, that sounds great together. So
yeah,
that's when we know we've got a good idea.
Was it somewhat easier for you to, when you stepped in to Jimmy's role, you know, for the tour, to kind of do that tour with sort of no strings attached? You know, I'm sure at that point you're a godsend coming in. You know, these guys need someone to play bass. You're obviously a very accomplished bass player, but, you know, maybe not coming in and saying, okay, Phil, this is your job for the next 8 years, but
right,
can you help us through the next 8 weeks, kind of thing. Does that give you a chance to kind of step inside to their world and feel what that chemistry is like, and make that decision for you easier? You know, I like what these guys are doing together. There's a good chemistry. It feels right for me personally. I mean, because it's a commitment when you step into a band.
Yeah. Very much like I said earlier, I initially was just coming in to be Jimmy Bain. And it was only for a short period of time. We fulfilled those obligations. And I think then is when I started to feel that the chemistry was there. And then we started thinking about long term. I mean, I don't even remember the moment, exact moment, but there was a discussion that said, you know, we should probably do another record. This is feeling really good. There's some great, you know, chemistry here. And there was a very compelling reason to actually go into the studio and write. And I do remember the first day we got together to write, and it was at a place in Anaheim. And I might have shared this with you before, but, you know, just because this is the way that the business works, I sort of said, well, okay, I'm going to prepare a few ideas and at least have something that I can bring in so that, you know, we have something for want of sitting around not being sure what to do.
Yeah.
And Viv actually said to me, no, don't do that. That's not how we like to do it. We like to do it completely fresh. So don't come in with anything. Just come in with, I'll come in with a guitar. You come in with a bass, and you know, Vinny will have his drums, and we'll just see what happens. And actually, we got in, Vinny and I were there. We were a little bit early. Viv was a little bit late, and immediately we started banging around on stuff, and we came up with the basis for one of the songs. Don't ask me which one.
Yeah.
Back to look at my notes, but that's how it came together. And I was a little nervous, because I remember thinking to myself, well, this can go one of two ways. We get together, and it's going to go great, and we're going to move forward, or we're going to get together, and it's just going to be like a bunch of, you know, idle jams, and I don't
yeah.
know, shake hands and say, well, that was fun. See you around. So I wanted it to work. I always get a little nervous at writing sessions, because that's really, it's a lot of duress, because creativity is not something you can really force.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to write a song. It's sort of something that comes and something that happens, and you really hope that it happens when you're in a situation where you want there to be a good outcome. But you're always aware in the back of your mind that, hey, maybe this won't work. Maybe this will just not pan out. So there's always a little bit of anxiety, I suppose. It's not worry. It's more anxiety. It's like, you know, I hope this works.
So. Yeah, I always amaze, you know, and I understand, you know, and there are a lot of musicians I've talked to over the years where, you know, especially pre-pandemic, that would have like 3 years of their life mapped out. You know, we're going to tour for these 6 months. We're going to take 2 months off. We're going to get together in February and write the album in 3 weeks. And, you know, but they would tell you this in advance. Like, you know, I'm not an accomplished musician by any stretch, but it amazes me when people can schedule creativity. And I would think when you do that, you would almost feel compelled to bring snippets in, you know, kind of the opposite of what Viv had suggested, you know, yeah. because of the pressure. But it's a wonderful thing, I guess, that you can, you know, that kind of nuclear explosion you get out of being in the same room with these guys.
Yeah. You know, it's really, I think that the desire to do it that way is to rely entirely on the chemistry of the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, in normally, I mean, in conventional type of situations, yeah, you walk into a room and everybody says, well, anyone got any ideas? And then everybody presents some ideas. I've got this, I've got that. And it turns into a listening session. And then everybody decides, well, let's work on these songs, and let's pick and choose the tracks we'd like to work on that we think may have some potential. But in this particular case, it was, you know, the idea is that we see what we come up with, and it works. I mean, it works with this band. It probably wouldn't work with other bands.
Yeah, I can think of a million scenarios where it would probably just lead to stress, quite frankly.
Hard to work sometimes with more than one other person.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done a lot of writing, and I've done a lot of co-writing, and you know, co-writing with one other person is one-on-one, and you're sitting there exchanging ideas, and it's very, you know, it's very nice to say, oh, you know what, I don't like that, I prefer this, or to turn around conversely and say, I have no idea what to do here, what do you think, and then somebody else to contribute to that, and you end up with something which is unique.
Mm-hmm.
You get three people, it starts to
yeah.
become a little tricky. But in this particular case, it works really well. And you know, sometimes Andrew comes in early as well. He'll come into the writing sessions and he'll have some input. So, you know, there's no real hard set method. I mean, it's whatever it takes for the four of us to get together and come up with material.
When you write on your own, you know, maybe aside from the band, do you have like a person that you, you know, maybe even a non-musician that you kind of bounce things off of to keep you in check? You know, I know sometimes it's very easy for a musician to get infatuated with their own ideas or conversely hate their own idea. You know, this is rubbish, you know, but, you know, somebody else might be in the room, you know, the spouse or something doing the dishes and something. Here's, you know, you're playing something. Go, that's, you know, that's a gem there. Do you have that kind of, you know, person that you like to bounce things off of?
No, not really. It takes me a long time. Well, I say it takes me a long time to write. Sometimes it takes me a long time to write. Sometimes it takes minutes to write. I wrote a song for Steve Lukather at one time called Tears of My Own Shame, which I think I wrote from start to finish in 20 minutes. And it's one of my favorite songs. But generally speaking, it takes a while. So I have a big fear of songs, of writing songs. And the fear is that they are very, very fragile ideas. It's very, very easy to take an idea that is in its embryonic stage and just for somebody to say, oh, I don't know, I don't like that. And you crumple it up and throw it away. That's it. It's done. So I'm very protective of these ideas. I don't want people to hear them. Conversely, the difficult part is for me to be critical about them because I'm getting so close to them that I don't really know. And the way that I deal with that is I tend to work on a song, take it to a certain point, put it away, go work on something else, and don't touch that song. And then come back to it after a day or two, or maybe even longer sometimes, and then listen to it with fresh ears. And usually you can hear, oh, I know what I need to do there. I need to change this, or I need to go, it needs to be a little bit of an extra phrase before it goes to the chorus, or whatever it happens to be. And that's a way to sort of be a little critical. The biggest problem I think that I have writing on my own, and probably anybody has writing on their own, is you tend to go down the same ideas all the time. So you tend to find these chord progressions, and then you'll always go to that chord progression. And that's a habit. That's habit. You have to break that in order to be different. I'm working on a song right now that was so different. I couldn't make it work. And then I said, well, why don't I just approach it as if it was a completely different style of song and approach it as a funk song, just out there, right? And all of a sudden it starts to make sense. And I put it away, came back to listen to it, said, you know, this is really cool. I like this. And so, you know, it's not going to be a complete funk song. It's just going to have a slightly different influence. And so whatever it takes to do that, I mean, I tell people when they ask me about writing or that they want to learn, you have to keep breaking the mold. You can't do the same ideas. If something starts to sound the same, change it. You know, just do something different. You don't want stuff to be like, oh, okay, this is typically what happens. This is where it goes. The idea is to break new ground all the time.
Honestly, Phil, I'm listening to you talking. I'm thinking this. You ought to get in touch with the folks at Masterclass and talk about that because, you know, I think, you know, guitarists, you know, especially, you know, we pick up the guitar, we, you know, you instantly go to the same chords, the same scales, you know, and it is hard to sometimes sound different, you know, and you listen to an album and I can tell you hundreds of albums that I've gone through where I go, okay, this is a cool song in 11 or 12 pieces, but it's not, you know, there's no ebb and flow, you know, peaks and valleys kind of thing that sometimes some of the great albums that throw you, you know, off speed pitches, curveball, you know, fastballs, different things in the same album that really can sometimes give you life. And it's hard as a musician to do that, you know,
It's a combination of everything that there is. I mean, it's a song is about the music. It's about the melody. It's that the melody sing to you. It's that I firmly believe in the hooks in songs. A hook is basically something that sticks in your mind. And whether you're a musician or you're a bus driver or you have a completely unrelated occupation, that you can whistle and it just keeps coming back in there. So hooks are important. You know, I've talked to some great producers and who I've known in, over the years, and they've all, you know, emphasized the importance of hooks. I mean, everyone from Mutt Lange to Down, you know, that's a, that's a very, very important thing. But also equally important are lyrics. You know, you want to say something, and you want to say something that that is provocative, meaning to say it makes someone feel something or think something. You're provoking and something, even if it's, and the ideal one, of course, is, or a simplistic idea would be that, oh, relation. Oh, I've been there. I've done that. This happened to me. I can relate to this song. That's provocative. And if you can incorporate this as the message, because a song is also lyrics, if you can incorporate the lyrics as well and make the lyrics, but people feel something from the lyrics, and then also that there's the music element to it that is catchy, that is pleasant, that is easy to remember, that comes back, and you know, then I think you're on the road to writing a good song. And by the way, thank you for that compliment that you paid me. I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, no, that that's.
If you want to get a little more cerebral about it, and you want to see what happens, you only have to look at the guitar player. And guitar players, they sit there noodling, and they're like, a very interesting experiment is to drop a hammer onto your knee and see how long it takes for your knee to kick back, your reflex. There's a time that it takes between wanting to do something. Actually, it's a bad example because the reflex works indirectly from your brain, but there is a time lag from thinking you want to do something to actually being able to do it. So when you see these notes being played so fast, they're not usually being thought of as such. They're usually a pattern that has been played over and over again until it becomes a motor reflex. And so there's these motor reflexes that are built into all aspects of us, of us players, that we tend to play the same. Oh, if I get to that place, then I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And it's all one motion. And that's what you have to break. Get out of the patterns to do something different. And Steve Vai told me one time, he said, people think I'm a great guitar player. I'm not. It takes me forever to come up with a new path, a new line, and to be able to play it the right way. And I have to play it very slowly, and I have to play it better and faster and faster and faster until the point where I can get it where I want it to be. And I think that's very typical of all musicians. Very easy to fall into patterns. I mean, I can play a blues pattern that I could play, you know, 100 times.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. And it's not like I'm thinking that note, then that note, then that note. It's just this motor.
Yeah.
And so we have to break these patterns, and whatever we can do to break them, I think, moves us forward as musicians.
That's fantastic insight from a great songwriter. I thank you, Phil, for that, because I've been listening to you speak, and I'm like, you're preaching to the choir here, because, you know, it is, you pick up the guitar, you pick up the bass, you know, drummers, I'm sure, the same way. You know, you tend to get into these, you know, here's what I practice, that's what I'm going to play. You know, and even as a lyricist, you know, I'm sure it's very easy to get into a bit of a rut where you're kind of singing about the same things. I think it's the people who can reach, you know, different emotions in the listener that really connect. You know, I think of, you know, a certain younger lady who's topping the charts, who very good at connecting with a very large population of people right now because of the quality of the lyrics.
And again, you know, the worst thing, the most heinous thing in the world is a cliche.
Yeah.
You know, I can't stand cliches. And they show that you haven't really thought about what you're doing. There are certain rhymes that you should avoid. Avoid them like the plague. You know, night, fight, right. I mean, the obvious things. You know? And then there are also cliches where, you know, I found that sometimes when you're writing lyrics, one of the most interesting ways of doing it is to actually write down a plan of what you're trying to say, and in the form of a short story. So, for example, in verse one, this happens to a person, and he's representing himself this way. And then we know what he's trying to do. And in the last verse, he's going to realize that everybody knows what he's trying to do, and he's going to have to change what he's doing, whatever it happens to be. I don't know. And you start to write this down, and then start to look for ways to illustrate that. How do you change something? You know, you talk about somebody's, you know, you know, common colloquial expressions to describe what somebody might be doing, what somebody
right.
might be thinking or feeling, and then change them a little bit. Think about a different way of putting those across. You know, we've got to be very, very careful with these sayings that we come up with all the time that are very commonplace. And if you find one of those things, rip it out. Find a new way to say it. You know?
When you're writing, do you? I mean, we're all, as you know, fans of music. You know, musicians, obviously. You know, obviously, something drew you to music, and it was a love of music. Do you have to sometimes fight, or do you not fight it when what you're maybe currently listening to kind of creeps in, you know, stylistically, or do you have a way to kind of compartmentalize? You know, I'm listening to Back in Black on the way to the studio, but I don't write Back in Black when I get there.
No, I don't think that I write based upon what I've heard. I mean, I do, but that would be the entire body of work that I've ever heard my whole life, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
There's times where you happen to like a particular chord change from one
yeah.
chord to another, and you say, hey, I really like that chord change, and you might say, well, I'm going to write these two chords and see if I can come up with something different over it, or if that inspires something.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I do that sometimes, but it's not generally that I'm sitting down there and saying, well, okay, well, I was listening to, you know, Back in Black, and so something is going to come out that's going to be definitely Black in Black.
Yeah.
I completely relate.
Bill,
inspiration comes from different places. I mean, I might watch a documentary on an artist or something completely unrelated, and then all of a sudden be inspired, not because I've heard something I want to emulate or copy, but because it's provoked some new ideas or some new thoughts, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can turn it on like a faucet, but you can't always do
something. Yeah. Yeah. And God bless the people who can. You guys, obviously, been about a year since Jericho. Have you guys talked? Obviously, Viv has got a very busy summer, and you guys have got dates kind of leading up to that. Do you guys have kind of a plan set aside late year into next year, maybe, to start talking about a follow up record, or
no,
is it a little
started,
too soon?
We've already started working on it. So, yeah, we already started working on a fourth record.
Awesome.
So we got together recently and started banging around new ideas, and there's a whole bunch of them. There's about 22 or 23 possible little cool snippets of things that we need to work on, and about three or four which are in very fairly advanced stages of completion. So yeah, we're not wasting any time. That's what we're going to do over the summer. We can, and now that we know we can do a lot of this stuff very remote.
Yeah.
There's a book I have here, which is I think it's called Two Rooms, but it was the story and all of the lyrics that were written by Elton John and Bernie Taupin, and they wrote everything. They never wrote anything together in the same room. And so it's sort of, you know, you can
it,
do that.
It worked. Yeah.
It worked for them. Right. And, but we can certainly do that. I mean, I know that, you know, Vinny and myself, we can always get together. We don't live too far from each other. We'll pull a studio. We can get in there and start working. Even if it doesn't happen to be around, we can always work that way. With a goal, you know, late autumn or end towards the end of the year of going back out on the road and start to play live shows again during that time. So that's the plan. That's the master plan.
Awesome. Well, Phil, I want to thank you so much for not only the time talking about the band, but the education. I think a lot of the folks that are interested in songwriting will deeply appreciate it. We will see you next Sunday night, fresh off M3 here, and you'll be in Pittsburgh, man. Thank you so much.
Very much looking forward to that show, and looking forward to seeing you, John.
Heart Royal Flush Tour 2024, May 23rd, PPG Paints Arena. A journey through the hits and timeless classics. The iconic band returns with special guest Cheap Trick.
Surrender.
Reserve seats on sale now at heart-music.com. Heart with Cheap Trick live. Produced by AEG Presents.
All right, special thank you to Phil Suzanne again for
for that education. I said in the interview, I feel like I should have paid him for some of that advice. Just an amazing mind to pick. Wrote one of the songs that I think really got me personally into hard rock was Shot in the Dark. So no shortage of wealth of knowledge in that man's brain on songwriting. So again, last in line will be at Jurgles on the 5th. And at the top of the show, we had a chance to converse with Eric Gales. He will be here on the 11th. So two shows coming up very soon. You can visit Jurgles Rhythm Grill website to purchase tickets, or we'll have links on ironcityrocks.com. Invite you to check out ironcityrocks.com if you have not in the past. There are 531 podcasts prior to this one. So no matter what kind of music you're into, if it's rock or blues or metal, we've got somebody that you'd like to check out. So go back and listen through the archives. We've got shots of concerts in the area. We've got ticket giveaways, all sorts of stuff. You can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Do you like more of the blues stuff? Do you like more of the metal stuff? You like neither? Let us know. Also, check out all our social medias. They're all Iron City Rocks. And until next time, thank you for taking the time to listen.